I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, in anticipation of the conference MCON 13, we're going to talk about millennials. We're going to talk about what this often little understood generation cares about, what it fears, and what it wants. We're going to discuss all of this with a great group of guests: Derek Feldman, CEO of Achieve, Nick Colby, president of both Colby Equipment and the Meridian Kessler Neighborhood Association, and Kristen Hess of Indiana Humanities. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or connecting via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
Support for No Limits is provided by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today in anticipation of the MCON 13 conference about millennials. Welcome you to join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Got a great group of guests today, starting with Derek Feldman, who is the CEO of Achieve. Derek, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here.
It's certainly good to have you here. Nick Colby, who is the president both of Colby Equipment and the Meridian Kessler Neighborhood Association. Nick, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, John. Thanks for having us.
Oh, it's good to have you here. And Kristen Hess of Indiana Humanities. Kristen, welcome to the program.
Thanks, John. It's good to be here.
Certainly. Well, I think we probably ought to start first by millennials is one of those terms that gets bandied about. And like, you know, a lot of the generational things, baby boomers had a notoriously elastic definition. We probably ought to talk about, for some people, what a millennial is, or at least the definition that we're working with. And then from there, I'm going to take the conversation into something about MCON 13. But I think we ought to get that part nailed down. Derek, I'll start with you.
Sure. So the term millennial refers to Generation Y. It's another term for it. And what it is the individuals that are ages 20 to 30, roughly. Now, some will disagree as to where the actual cutoff is. It just depends which institution you like, whether that's a Pew or Stanford or Harvard, whoever that is. And the reason why is because those that are above the ages of 30, between 31 and, say, 35 or 36, sometimes we call those cuspers, which means that they're on the cusp between being a millennial or Generation Y and Generation X, which is right below the boomers. And the reason why that there's a little bit of confusion is because that cusper part tends to have tendencies in technology and other things that represent millennials, but they're not necessarily in that age bracket. But for the purposes of probably our conversation, those in their 20s.
So if we're saying anyone born between 1983 and 93?
Absolutely,
roughly.
Yeah. And sometimes we'll just say 80 or 83, but that's
80
correct.
80 to...
That's correct.
Okay. And is that a definition that everybody's comfortable with here? Nick, you're lifting an eyebrow.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I'm a cusper myself.
You're a cusper? Okay, well, we'll try not to hold that against you. Okay, well, then tell me a little bit about MCON 13, what we're trying to get done here.
Sure. So 4 years ago, I started some research with some other colleagues, JGA and others, and our goal was to try and figure out how the millennial generation gets connected with causes and communicates and so forth. And we've been able to do a lot of that work over the last 3 years, in particular with support from the Case Foundation out of Washington, D.C., Steve and Gene Case. And Steve's the founder of AOL, and Gene has been very involved in a lot of the development of that and others. And what we do every year is we focus our research on how millennials connect, involve, and give. So that's how we use the term engagement. And it's often in that discussion that we not only research how they do that, but how they're working in the environments that they are, the workplace environments, how they're getting attracted to causes and corporate engagement with millennials as well. So MCON 13 is really a day of thought discussion for leaders around the country, both in person here in Indianapolis and nationwide, as we have a national live stream viewing. And what it is intended to do is to help really executive leaders get the fundamental basis for what's happening with a generation, some of that thought leadership and how they're connecting, how they're involving and giving, and then what we're seeing in the culture side and the workplace environment.
What do you mean by thought leadership?
Yeah, so our goal here is to help them understand the thinking behind how millennials and the why. Why are they acting the way they do? Why do they use so much technology? And we also have millennials presenting at MCON that really illustrates some of the things that they're caring about, like transparency and open environments and corporations and others. So when we say thought leadership, it's really around some of the biggest thinkers in the space, from Deloitte on the workplace side to also some nonprofit organizations, from NPR in itself, who's working with this, and Generation Listen as well, coming together and saying, this is what we're hearing, this is what we're experiencing, here's where we got to go from here.
We are talking about millennials in advance of the MCON 13 conference. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Kristen, as sort of a representative of a not-for-profit here, why is it a challenge to connect with millennials? I've been in the not-for-profit world for a long time, and I think I know the answer, but probably better to hear it from you.
Sure. I think I'm uniquely positioned with this in that I'm a millennial myself, but also our organization prioritizes reaching out to millennials. I think the greatest challenge is in that millennials want to be reached out to in a very meaningful way, which is often a customized way, a way that really fits their needs, their desires, and creates meaning through working with things that they're already interested in or think that they're already good at. So it's engaging them in a way that's meaningful to them, which can require a little bit of thought to make it customized.
Well, how much of that, Anna? It is a different kind of approach, because I know in my days, for example, I was former executive director of the Indiana Civil Liberties Union it's now the ACLU of Indiana. But a lot of, particularly the development advice you got from the national ACLU was, we need to focus on planned giving right now, because these next generations, the generational divide does not, the folks who are below a certain age don't give in the same ways. And until we figure that out, we need to build a cushion. In terms of dealing with that, a lot of not-for-profits have frankly flailed. Is this an attempt to stop the flailing and actually move forward?
I think one thing that we've noticed most, due to a lot of the leadership we've received from Derek and his great team at Achieve, is that it begins with relationships. And so I think that's where our organization is right now, is that we're in that place of cultivating relationships with millennials so that we can move forward in the most meaningful way.
And Nick, in your perception, how are millennials different than the generations that came before them?
Well, our organization is a neighborhood organization that basically is an advocacy and a quality of life organization. Our biggest challenge is, and it reaches into the millennial generation, but I think a lot of those same principles apply to other generations as well, but just that, our organization is a 50-year-old organization, nearly. When we started in 1965, the ways in which we reach out to our residents and our those of interest has to change to keep up to the modern ways of reaching out to people and engaging people. And it's harder. People aren't seeking out that information as much. And there's so much information, and it's trying to filter that down and get it in front of people.
Well, how has it changed the way, say, that a neighborhood association conducts itself then?
It changing in a sense that it's, printed newsletter has historically been our key way to reach individuals, and while I think there's there's still some value to that. The, you know, the Facebook and the Twitter and email contact is much more effective, and that's what people are looking for, and people just frankly aren't checking their mailbox and looking for that kind of information like they once were.
We're talking about millennials here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Derek, tell me a little bit about Achieve, what it is that you're trying to do with that.
Yeah, and so I lead Achieve, and we're a creative agency that focuses on social causes and engaging constituents, and millennials is a part of that group with the work of an organization. And we've been leading the research over the course of the last 4 years in partnership with the Case Foundation and others. And in a lot of our research and working with clients, and then also the Millennial Impact Research and MCON, we've really have a vast data sets of what we're seeing happening, you know, whether it be responses to solicitations or call to actions and newsletters. We're really getting a lot of great feedback now and understanding really why somebody acts, why a millennial acts in that moment. And in fact, this year, John will debut on Thursday at MCON. We actually did user testing on websites of nonprofits, some of the biggest nonprofits out there from a Nature Conservancy and others, to try and hear and listen to the thinking of what's going on when they interact with this, with materials and marketing, to try and understand what really resonates and what doesn't. And so I'm excited at that point on Thursday.
Give me an overview. I mean, what does separate millennials from previous generations? I mean, in the way that they approach all of, is it all the explosion of technology, or are there other forces at work?
We usually talk about four things in general when it comes to millennials. The first one being technology. I mean, they are digital natives, which means that they've never really not had technology at their disposal. Now, even within the time span that they've been born, I mean, technology has really advanced even since then. I mean, from what the VCR was to the TiVo and DVR and to where we are now with none of that, you know, and to streaming and so forth. So they are digital natives. Now, we use that a lot as our reason to try and connect with them and say, well, if we post something, they'll immediately respond. And that's not necessarily true.
Kevin Costner, if you build it, they
exactly.
will come.
You know, and that actually happened with probably a lot of companies and organizations early on that said, you know, our first way is we're going to create a Facebook page. And then, you know, they create it and nobody's there. It feels awkward. And then, you know, of course, we all said the social media thing's for the birds. It's not going to happen. Mm-hmm. Well, we were all wrong. But I think the second thing that we have, too, is in the workplace environment is where we had Gen X saying, let's look at work-life balance, right? So 5 o'clock or others were out. We're seeing millennials do what we call work-life blending, in which it's, you know, they're working from 8 to 10 and then, you know, doing other things and then still working all the way up until the night. And so we really see this blending of both community, personal, and their professional life all together. For some, that's a little scary and frustrating. Mm-hmm. Other generations, especially when they're working with them on teams. And I think the one thing that we'll talk about this year in our research is that we see a lot of millennials attaching to causes, the issue itself, and not necessarily the organization. A good example of that is that we did some testing on a message that said, would you help feed or give water to 4 people in Africa? And then we did a secondary message that said, would you help water.org give water to 4 people in Africa? And each time, the one that just the issue always resonated. And we still see that happening in a lot of the communications that we see. They're attached to changing the world to these topics and issues, and that's where we really need to pull forward.
In terms of, I mean, how do they make the distinction, though? Does the research show that the water just won't magically appear there? There has to be an organization or some entity that performs the delivery, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and that's probably the most and this is where a lot of communications have really challenged organizations. It's to make the leap to say, so this is the issue. This is why the issue is important. And this is the organization underneath that issue that helps make this all possible. Now support that organization, in which some people have challenges with that, especially when there are other organizations on the community that can say, if you give $10, you can give a net to somebody in Africa, and they can, you know, be addressed and with malaria, or, you know, try to prevent it. And so we see this challenge, and that little piece of the marketing message. Those have done really well, have said, this is the issue, and I'm going to tell you how we help. This is the people around making your donation or your effort come alive. Really focusing on the people behind the organization can help.
So it's much more, you've got to connect them to the idea of the end rather than the means to it.
Absolutely. And a lot of marketing has even done that, even in the consumer world. You know, you look at marketing from, say, a Tom Shoes, who has a social bent to it, where it's, you know, you buy this shoe, there's going to be somebody else in the end that's going to have been able to walk in shoes and have that. So they didn't talk about, well, if you give it to us, we're Tom Shoes, we're going to take your money and then deposit it. And then we're, you know, they focused more on the end outcome.
We are talking about millennials in advance of the MCON 13 conference. My guests are Derek Feldman, Nick Colby, and Kristen Hess. You are listening to No Limits. I am John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. In advance of the MCON 13 conference, we are talking about millennials. My guests are Derek Feldman, who is the CEO for Achieve, Nick Colby, who is the president of both Colby Equipment and the Meridian Kessler Neighborhood Association, and Kristen Hess, who is with Indiana Humanities. We were talking just before the break about how technology has shaped things, that millennials, by and large, at least in terms of connecting with causes or even in the way that companies market themselves, are more interested in ends than they are necessarily in means of getting there. We've established technology is the explosion of technology is one huge determinant. Kristen, are there other sort of cultural forces that have shaped the way that millennials look at the world that are different than, say, you know, even Generation Y, or, you know, poor cuspers like Nick here?
Sure. So, I find that a lot of my peers are extremely socially conscious. I think we were all shaped by 9/11. It hit us at a pretty formative age, and there's a real desire to jump into things, to be a part of things, and also a real longing for transparency, mm-hmm. and knowing how one thing will lead to the next. And you know, we can tweet to large corporations and get a response. We're used to being able to have relationships with the people and places and organizations that we communicate with, and so that's something that I think is exciting about a wide variety of topics.
To follow, you say you were shaped, your generation was shaped by 9/11. In what ways were
Well,
you shaped?
I think it was, it happened in kind of a coming of age time of our lives. So we were becoming adults and making our own decisions. And it was an event that really brought people together. It brought up a lot of questions about what it means to live in the U.S. and what it means to be a part of communities and help people out. And I think that awareness of others and of opportunities to be involved and do things is something that stuck.
Yeah, although I guess the reason I'm asking that question is, you know, most people looking at where we are today would argue that after 9/11, it's not like we really did come together for all that long. Mm-hmm. We've been fairly fractious since then, which sort of led me to the next question, which was the priority, the focus on transparency, in part because one of the complaints following that is that there was an awful lot of information withheld, and I'm not going to make it a partisan thing. Both presidential mm-hmm. administrations have come under fire for this,
sure.
the Democrats and the Republicans. Is that part of the legacy of 9/11 too for millennials, or
perhaps? I mean, I think Derek might know a little bit more about the research with that one, but I think that the transparency topic, whichever side of the issue you
Why
might
is it
fall.
So? I guess I'll take it away from. Stop forcing you to be a spokesperson for your entire generation here, and just ask personally, why is transparency so important to you? You are a millennial. Why is it a priority for you?
It matters to me because I feel as if there are so many options when it comes to purchasing options, when it comes to how I spend my free time, my volunteer time, and I want to make the most of it. It really matters to me that I leave things better than they were before. And so whether it be which toothpaste I'm buying or which nonprofit I'm volunteering for, if I feel like I understand it and I know the real mission and real purpose, then that's something that matters more to me. It's the relationships.
What I'm picking up here is kind of a subtext, too, is that for millennials, I mean, both in your personal anecdotes and Derek's research, is that, you know, at some level, trust is something that has to be earned for millennials, that there is. Kristen says yes right away. Derek, is that what the research shows as well?
Absolutely. And I think we covered this in our research several years ago when the deciding factor is trusting an organization and building a relationship with them. And it's interesting, as we've even seen in a digital age, that's possible. There's organizations like the Environmental Defense Fund. If you sign up for their emails, you start to get to know Sam Perry. Mm-hmm. Sam Perry is the online manager that says, you know, if you need anything, you email me, you text me, you do whatever you can. And so as much as possible, organizations are shifting away from just saying, you know, this is just info at or somebody else, and we're actually attaching real people behind the entity. And that's the people that are, you know, on the front lines of trying to help people like Kristen buy products and get involved in their companies and in their organizations. And we have found that trusting, and that trust does sometimes come from millennial peers, mm-hmm. which is a very big deciding factor when it comes to consumer buying. And in fact, we've seen technologies, which, whether it's Angie's List here or others, mm-hmm. that help other people find more trust in companies and their services and goods. So it's going to be a wave, and it's going to continue to be very important.
We are talking about millennials here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or if you would like to connect with us via Facebook or Twitter, you can do so at WFYI. In terms of this, I guess I'd like to ask where that breakdown really of trust, and I'll just toss out there. I know there's been a lot of speculation that, you know, to some degrees the informal social contract broke down. You know, the whole idea that if you just followed the rules, there would be a place for you. It'd be a place for you at work. There'd be a place for you in the community, and all of that has been somewhat shattered by the upheavals of the last 50 years. Is that a fair analysis of where millennials are? I'll start with you, Derek, but I want to hear everyone's thoughts on this.
I don't think so. I think what has happened today is that there is, between millennials and their peers and also other generations, still a social contract, or, you know, kind of what you talk about. And the reason why is that what technologies have enabled us to do is to report and provide feedback faster, to learn faster, to do all of those other things that help us make decisions better and so forth. Some would argue that that might be too fast, and to a certain extent that challenges traditional institutions and the way that things were done. But some of the best disruptions have actually really helped us, you know, accomplish great things. And whether that's creating a social network where a millennial, which did that, Mark Zuckerberg, mm-hmm. you know, for the most part, that's a communication and connection network. It allows me to share with people that might have the same interest as me. So I think in that terms, the best thing that some social networks have been able to do is connect you with people that I might not have ever been connected to that share the same common pieces that I have, which can be for a better community and for the better workplace environment. And so I view that today's society and where we are is not necessarily as a negative or things have broken down, but that the disruptions that millennials are bringing are, for the most part, helpful and good to help us enhance our societies and make them much better as well.
Kristen, I'm going to give you a shot at the question.
Yeah, I can't, you know, I'm not sure it's a general feeling of distrust at all times, but more a desire to connect. Mm-hmm. And since connecting has become something that's convenient, you know, I have friends and family members who live all over the world, and I can see instantly from my cell phone. I think a lot of my peers and I demand that with all facets of our life, wanting to connect and really kind of derive meaning from our behaviors.
Nick?
Yeah, I would agree. And I think, too, with the digital push, that information's so much quicker. You know, and maybe what took a decent amount of time to, you know, information to get out now happens, you know, instantly. If someone has a bad experience with XYZ company, I mean, in a matter of seconds, they can broadcast that to however big their community, their network is, and like you say, to get people's desire to make a difference and to make choices, there's just more information out there available for them to use to make those choices that wouldn't have existed in, you know, 25 years ago.
But I guess where I'm going with this, and I hear Derek's point that in some ways it's a different kind of social contract, that there is one, but that, you know, that idea that there was an ongoing relationship with reciprocating loyalties, that, for, you know, to use the classic example of you know, what's now probably the Depression generation or the Greatest Generation, mm-hmm. as Tom Brokaw kind of glorified it, that idea that if you took a job with a company, that, you know, that was a relationship with that was in some ways transformational, that you were making that decision and it was a long-term commitment. And what I'm hearing and seeing now is that a lot of this is much more transactional, that particularly what Kristen was saying with the, you know, being able to get the information and bounce back and forth, millennials in effect want to be the CEOs of their own destinies. And that is a different kind of approach or relationship. Is that, did I characterize what you were saying fairly, Kristen?
I think in some ways, yeah. I think, you know, a lot of us are excited to jump in and get involved, and not that there's not a respect for leadership that's already in place, but if someone is going to share a seat at the table, then we'll take it. And again, I can't speak on behalf of my entire generation, of course, but especially working in a field that's a little bit more open to new leadership and new ideas, I think it's an exciting time to kind of take advantage of that.
And it was, yeah. It was interesting. My it was junior year. I went home from college, and my dad said, you know, let's go out and have a beer on the deck. And so I went out there, and he said, so what's the plan? What's your plan? You know, you probably, you know, my parents always love that. And so, because he said to me, Derek, you know, you came home the first year and you were pre-med, and then now you're going to graduate with criminal justice degree and a minor in zoology. And then, of course, his next comment was, if you're going to be a zoo cop, that's fine. That's completely fine. They were supportive of that.
By the way, I'm taking notes of how not to frame conversations
exactly.
with my children.
Exactly.
That's a whole lot.
So, and it's interesting because his next comment to me was, you know, Derek, before I went into the Army, I was a loader at a building yard. Mm-hmm. And to this day, he's still there. He's still, now he's an outside contractor salesman. He's been with that company mm-hmm. so long. And you know, now the research will tell us that a millennial will probably have 15 to 20 different jobs before the time they retire. And is that necessarily bad? Well, you know, that's tough for some managers who have to manage individuals who might depart. I think now we're in a stage to say, how can we provide the best skill set for, and how can we take the talent that's out there right now, use them to the best of their ability? And if we create an environment that involves teams intergenerationally, reverse mentoring up and down, and provide those opportunities for them to learn, will they stay around? And we have seen that. There are millennials that do that. But yes, there is a trend out there that it's not necessarily loyalty. It's for professional leadership and advancement that they're starting to move forward.
Well, and it is to some degree, at least what I hear, is that the view of the employer-employee relationship is much different. It's less paternalistic and much more independent contractors working together.
Yeah, and we've seen
at least temporarily shared goals.
Exactly, we've in some corporations that we have worked with, they it's almost working side by side with their employees, not top down, mm-hmm. in saying how can we work with you to advance you personally and also help us as a company deliver the products and goods and services we need to. And in the same time, if we do take care of each other, then we hope that you will stay and we'll keep investing in you as you go along. But understand that you might depart at some point.
We are talking about millennials here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, we've talked a fair bit about how the world, the explosion of technology, events such as 9/11 and, political and economic culture have shaped millennials. I'd like to turn that around now, because one of the other themes that's come through is that millennials want to change the world. They see ends. They want to change. So let's first start with how they want to change the world, and then the ways that they will change the world. There's some difference always, obviously, between aspiration and achievement. So I'll start with Nick on that one, even though you're a cusper.
Change the world.
Well, let me start that. Keep it local here. You assumed a leadership position with the Meridian Kessler Neighborhood Association. What did you want to do there?
Sure. I think the we talked a lot about community, and that has a lot of definitions and could be broad. But as far as I'm concerned, as being in a neighborhood association, that the community is fairly small, and we've got people. Everybody wants, there's a lot of things that are being looked at. And again, it spans a little bit beyond this particular generation we're talking about, but it's the sustainability and those things that everyone is looking for. But they want to be active and involved in what's happening in their community. I think we've gotten somewhat back to that sense of community that maybe we lost for a while. And people are very passionate about where they live and what's happening and the events that are going on and the businesses that are coming in, and exactly what you said. I mean, they want to make a difference, and that's maybe not saving the world, but it's very impactful in their daily life.
At least saving their corner of it.
Right, exactly.
Their corner of the world.
Yeah.
Kristen, how do millennials want to change the world?
Well, I think it depends on the person. However, right now, I actually have the pleasure of being on loan to Indianapolis Downtown Incorporated to manage a new strategic plan for downtown Indianapolis. So I've been hearing a lot of ideas lately. And a couple of things that resonate are that people want to make a big impact very locally and globally simultaneously. So, we're hearing a lot of talk about strong neighborhoods and transportation and being able to walk and, do their part in little ways, maybe invest talents that affect day-to-day life or kind of complement things that people already do on the job. But I think that there's just a real desire to continually make an impact. I think a lot of us grew up community service as part of our education and our upbringing, and it's something that's certainly not going away.
Derek?
So we've seen, at least from the data points that we continue to get in, is that millennials are looking to obviously change their local community as they have defined it. And that takes usually what we call a strand of activation, from whether it's I'm sending a tweet to feel that I'm being heard, mm-hmm. automatically to self-organizing, that's sort of on the other end of it. And we've found that...
Define that term.
Yeah, self-organizing means that they're bringing their peers, 4 or 5 members of their really small peer group together to try and affect an issue or a cause that they really care about, sometimes with or without a nonprofit organization that's associated with it. And it's just, it's just like anybody that you might hear where somebody wants to try and raise money for somebody that has cancer. It's mm-hmm. something that people come out to. So we see them taking some digital small steps early on. And then as they continue to get more entrenched in the topic and get more educated on what's happening, is that they start to even move into larger areas of getting together with their friends and others to affect a cause. And then that's the important part. At that moment, we hope organizations and millennials find each other, because that's where we can reduce duplication and so forth.
We are talking about millennials here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter. My guests are Derek Feldman of Achieve, Nick Colby of Colby Equipment and Meridian Kessler Neighborhood Association, and Kristen Hess of Indiana Humanities. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about millennials today on No Limits in advance of the MCON 13 conference. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881, or you can connect with us by email, as a listener named P. Quake has done, by sending an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. And his question is, how do millennials who so fiercely guard their independence and affiliations manage their own personal brands? Are they building more authentic selves, and how do companies value and nurture that for their own purposes? That's a profound question. That's a good one. Thank you very much for that one. Derek, I'll start with you.
Yeah, so we are seeing this. Yes, millennials do do a lot of their own sort of personal branding, whether that be through social networks and others. And what's interesting is we see the corporate and consumer side, in addition to some of the larger nonprofits, are watching those individuals to see how they're interacting with products or even talking about things. And because they're trying to understand not only what's happening in their life and how they can apply their products, services, or goods, or even how they can help the community, and at the same time sort of see if they can bring them in, bring them together. It's interesting as we look at some of the best social network engagement from large nonprofits. They will watch and scour websites to find out, you know, if it's a stroke organization, who's talks about their family having a stroke or anything else, just to try and reconnect them to it. And there's another part to that question, which is around the personal brand and building it up.
Mm-hmm.
I always find it interesting, and as millennials start to build their own personal and professional brand, is that there is a sense of, you know, this is who I am and these are the values I care about, and sort of putting it out there, mm-hmm. to see who else connects with it directly. Now, some consumer side will use that to their advantage, but it really is a chance, as Kristen was saying, to connect to others, connect to those goods. We hope that obviously those are for the good, and that companies and others can take that advantage and try and bring them in.
Kristen, we've gotten another email question from a listener named Kenny, who says, as an environmentally engaged boomer, I am distressed about the environmental damage that too many in my generation are engaged in. I'm very alarmed about the quality of the earth that we are leaving you. What is your opinion about this? I'll start with you on that one, Kristen.
Well, I think that that's a topic that resonates with me as an individual and many of my peers. I think it is more common to see people talking about environmental activism on a personal, individual scale, though. So, for example, riding bicycles, or, you know, we've all seen the studies about how millennials aren't so interested in having cars or sharing cars and using public transportation more often. Little ways like that, I think, are what's most common, just making additions to daily life.
What are the, you know, we've talked about transparency being big. What are the overarching, the large issues, the large focus issues? We've also talked about how they want to, you know, sort of, to use the cliche, brighten the corner where they live. But, you know, in terms of global, like environmental quality and all of that, what are the issues that are of the greatest importance to millennials, Derek?
Well, you know, we are seeing every year that we've done the research, it's interesting what happens or percolates to the top. Sometimes it's international causes, but we have to sort of put a little asterisk next to that, because there might be a natural disaster or something that occurs around it. But I will say, you know, to Kristen's point, that the environment and some of those international causes have been very important to millennials. And when they look on the consumer buying side, what we're seeing millennials reacting to is sustainability efforts, you know, corporate social responsibility, is that in the method in which to produce the product or good, that they're doing something that's sustainable for the environment. And some millennials now are demanding to hear, what are you doing to make sure? And you know, Starbucks has started to do a lot more in that area, and other companies have. To tell them not only that here's the product, but also here's how we produce that product so that you, when you buy that, you'll know that it's not meant to harm anything.
I probably, since you've done most of the research, Derek, and we're directing conversation your way, a large part because these are kind of large, I've been remiss and probably, how did you gather all of this information? How did you go about, where did you go about, I mean, I know Kristen has said it feels like you're reading her mind, but still.
Which is a little scary, right?
Yeah.
So we actually partner with organizations every year. We recruit research partners from large national nonprofits to very small local organizations throughout the country. And what we do is we ask them to distribute not only survey mechanisms to their millennial audiences, we also do focus groups with their audiences as well to validate responses. And then in addition to that, we do a thing called user testing where we actually watch them and videotape their reactions to different types of marketing and digital websites.
We've gotten a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air, who says, as an older millennial, I feel like I'm stuck between baby boomers who seem uninterested in retirement and younger millennials who have many years of work in front of them. What are the options for those of us who feel like we are stuck in the development of our careers? Nick, I'll throw that one to you. You're an employer, I guess.
Gosh, I guess I could understand feeling a little bit stuck in between, as mentioned, being a cusper. But, you know, you just got to embrace who you are.
Is that a frustration, though? I mean, in terms of my own career, there was this feeling that the generation ahead of us was just never going to get out of the way. And is that a sense... Is there that sense among millennials, too? Derek, you're nodding your head.
Well, there is. And the workplace environment today is interesting because we've got sometimes four generations stuck in the same corporate office or small business, wherever it is. And I can tell you that probably some greatest generation individuals never expected to be working side by side with somebody who's probably
in their
20s, right? And so all of a sudden, you know, it's Monday morning at the staff meeting, you look around, and it's definitely an interesting stage of where we are. But, and I think part of that's due to there are some theories around is that the economy is the reason why we didn't get some of those to retire earlier than we thought. Or is it that there's so many millennials, you know, there's 80 million of them that are coming into the brackets there of getting jobs and so forth. So it's just sort of there's a lot of squeezing everybody in right now. But for this person's sake, what we have seen is that, yeah, boomers haven't necessarily retired as fast as some of us had thought. And we have a lot of millennials coming up. So you're kind of that generation is always sandwiched there.
And some of that, I mean, there are economic forces.
Exactly.
And also some of the technology is working on the other end, too. And that, you know, most of the actuarial tables show when Social Security, for example, on our whole retirement plan was set up, they chose 65 because basically you couldn't be expected to live much beyond 70 at that point, even if you'd made it as far as 65. Now, if you've made it to 65, you've got a pretty good chance of making it into your late 80s or early 90s if you take care of yourself. And most people are looking at, will I have enough, you know, of a certain age, you're saying, will I have enough money? But that stretches out the careers.
Right.
For
Definitely.
Older people, it also stretches out the careers potentially for millennials in that, you know, say you enter the workforce when you're in your early 20s, does the thought that you could be doing this for the next 60 years daunt you in any way?
Yipes, huh? For some of us.
Well, I guess the answer is yes to that one. We've gotten a tweet from a listener who says, it's ironic that millennials express same ideals, values, intentions as boomers at their age. What will the difference be besides jargon and technology?
I'll say that in our research, it's funny, we're trying to do some cross-generational mm-hmm. analysis, and we do find that one of the core differences is technology, and there's a few other things, but the spirit, you know, the community and all that actually resides in both generations, and it's interesting to see them work together. Now, I think probably the difference is in the work, how we complete the work is probably the way that's the biggest difference, in which we talked about that work-life blending mantra that we see with millennials. But in general, that community support, the going out there and working together, we do see some commonalities.
Well, and I guess what I'm curious, in part, I understand where the listener was coming from on that one, because I see particularly with some of the rhetoric from the 60s and all of that, I'm not going to use the word distrust, but ambivalence about institutions and a greater
right.
focus on means, but realizing at some level that if you are going to affect the change you want, you have to build an infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
In some ways, are we just circling back only with, you know, much faster response times now thanks to technology?
Yeah, partially, I think. And it also means, too, that as the rhetoric and some will say, well, they're institution agnostic maybe at times, and other, you know, millennials. But it's almost like a part of our culture and our upbringing is to experiment, to look at things, to care about the issues, to find the careers we like. And at times we try to just do that on our own, and it is for every generation. And I think some of the generational studies that have been out there have shown that when you study somebody who's in their 20s, they're going through an evolution in themselves as well. That is very common with others in their 20s.
We've gotten a couple of questions from a listener, email questions from a listener named Allie, who says, it appears that many organizations are spending more time trying to figure out millennials, puts figure out in quotes, but not talking to us directly. How can companies encourage more effective intergenerational communication? Kristen, you're fighting that war right now. So we'll throw that one to you.
Well, I mean, in terms of Indiana Humanities, certainly our strongest programs are those that are intergenerational. I think as a society, we like fitting people into categories, and I'm not so sure that's the way to go. I think that there's a real fine line between communicating to people in the way that's best for them to receive it, as well as to a general audience, and I think both balancing that is very important.
And then the other question was, in addition to Kristen's point about millennials experiencing 9/11 and becoming more socially conscious, I also would add that our generation has experienced so much mandatory community service learning in schools. Do the guests think that influenced our interest in choosing the right nonprofit or organization to contribute our resources and time to?
I would say yes. I think that even too, as the mandated community service was a part of our education, now that we are adults and having our own lives and careers, I think there's a desire to do even more. You know, that was what I did when I was younger. Now, you know, for example, as a graphic designer, I do a lot of pro bono design mm-hmm. as my volunteer work. I want to do even more and make a bigger impact than maybe folding brochures or things I did when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
Derek.
And it's partially that, not only that service had already started to go into the K-12 systems, but there's another thing is that nonprofits also started themselves to go into the systems. We started fundraising already. You know, just the other day, Lydia, my neighbor, had come over and talked about what she's trying to raise money for. I mean, we started this, the concept of helping others and raising support and coming together already in those schools. And there are a lot of organizations, national nonprofits, major medical organizations that have programs at the K-12 level. And so I think it's a combination of both of those. But, you know, the rise of things like AmeriCorps, Teach for America, and others have really helped to make service not only just something you select, but just a part of it, part of who you are.
Is there, jumping off this point, is the idea of mandatory community service in schools a good idea? I mean, I'm picking up some ambivalence here, too, that, you know, to some degree, this feeling, and I think, Kristen, you've come right up to the edge of articulating this, that it should be the person's choice rather than some institution's.
I don't know, because I feel like mandated community service was very formative for me, and it exposed me to a lot of populations and audiences and parts of my community that I wasn't familiar with at a young age.
What sorts of things did you do?
For community service?
Yeah, for mandatory.
Everything from soup kitchens to cleaning up parks to working at women's shelters, kind of the whole spectrum. And even in college, I attended Butler University and service.
Yeah, most colleges now also have a community service component.
Sure. As well.
Is there research on that, Derek, that shows, I mean, is it effective, or is there a kind of pushback on the part of the millennials and say, okay, we grasp the concept, let us pick our own way to contribute?
No, there's a lot of great research that has come out, Learn and Serve and all of these other national initiatives and AmeriCorps and others, where service options have really helped somebody advance and create, you know, get some skills that they haven't had before. I think the thing that's important now with service is not just do we expose them to helping somebody else, but how do we also use, as Kristen said, her talent to make or help the organization advance in some way? Or if I'm, you know, it's the same way of doing an internship. The reason I would do an internship at Nick's place of work, Colby Equipment, is that I would learn something and I would advance professionally. And so I think now the movement is, how can we prepare organizations to take somebody, a millennial like Kristen, who has great service or talent from graphic design, and help that advance us rather than just just doing service.
I want to get this to some sort of point where we let's flash forward here, and we'll take the most expansive definition of millennials here. We'll go with that 1980 starting point and take it forward to, say, 2040, when the millennials now have moved through at least the middle portion of their adult years. How will they have changed the world? Nick, I'll start with you. Got about 30 seconds.
Hopefully in a sense of bringing the community together, and I think the environmental that we talked about earlier is a big component of that, and just hopefully, you know, we can solve at least a little bit of the world's problems.
Kristen.
That's a tricky question. But I would like to think that in 20 years we'll have figured out a more comfortable work-life balance, meaning that we can do good, we can do work, and we can make our communities better all at the same time. I think that would be a really, really great legacy.
Derek.
I think the biggest thing that will happen is that millennials will come into our workplaces and where transparency, openness, and other things, I think they're going to change the culture and how we operate to help have a bigger impact in the community and others. And I think they'll also create some new advances in technology that will make it faster and easier for us to address an issue.
I think that's going to have to be the last word. I'd like to thank all of you for joining me. Derek Feldman, thank you very much for being here. I enjoyed talking with you. And Nick Colby, thank you very much for joining us. It was
thank
a pleasure
you.
Talking with you. Kristen, thank you very much. I hope we didn't put you too much on the spot by asking you to talk as a representative of your entire generation.
It's a good generation. But thank you.
Thank you very much for joining us today. You have been listening to No Limits. I am John Kroll. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alsett. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.